We're talking about how you are going to be able to meet the new 82 degree Fahrenheit maximum indoor cooling mandate and also talk insurance rules and can require electrical panel updates. We are fortunate to be once again joined by the expert electricians from the Electric Connection of Los Angeles. And of course, I'm Dan Uchelson, the Chief Executive and Executive Director of the Apartment Association of Greater Los Angeles. Listen, if you haven't heard yet, LA County, not too long ago, passed an 82 maximum indoor air requirement, which would require most property owners to cool to no more than 82 degrees all habitable rooms inside their multifamily properties. There's a delay for smaller owners. I think they have until like 2032, and until then, they only have to cool one habitable room, but it's going to require air conditioning to get to that. And the this rule is a habitability requirement, so you have no ability other than to comply with it. And City of LA is currently looking at a very similar ordinance. And in fact, there is a proposed state bill that would mandate no more than 82 degrees everywhere in California. So get ready for it, folks. This is a really, really important webinar we're talking about today. Please pay attention. I'm sure you're going to learn a great deal from it. Just remember, if you've got questions, be sure to use the Q&A button located right there at the bottom of your screen and try to keep your questions as short and concise as possible. And before we introduce today's guest, our sponsor from the Electric Connection of Los Angeles. I want to just say a few words about them. And you know, without the generous support of sponsors like the Electric Connection of Los Angeles, we would not be able to bring you these incredible webinars for free. The Electric Connection is Southern California's trusted electrical contractor serving rental housing providers for over 40 years. If you own or manage property in Los Angeles County, you already know compliance is never optional, especially with evolving safety standards and the county's ordinance requiring landlords in unincorporated areas to maintain maximum indoor temperature threshold for rental units. That means the reliability of your electrical system matters more than ever. Whether you're installing cooling systems to meet habitability standards, upgrading outdated wiring, or replacing aging electrical panels to safely handle increased load demands, the Electric Connection helps rental housing providers stay ahead of compliance risks. Older panels simply weren't designed to support today's HVAC systems, EV chargers, and high-demand appliances. A properly permitted electrical panel upgrade not only improves safety, it protects your property from overload hazards, reduces liability exposure, and helps ensure you can meet indoor temperature requirements without system failures. From panel upgrades and dedicated circuit installations to full rewires and code corrections, the Electric Connection licensed electricians understand multifamily properties and work efficiently to minimize disruption to tenants. If you're evaluating whether your building's electrical capacity can support cooling compliance or future upgrades, now is the time to act. Visit theelectricconnection.com or call them at 818-446-0888 to schedule your free consultation. The Electric Connection is powering compliance, protecting properties, and supporting rental housing providers across Los Angeles County. Again, visit theelectricconnection.com or call them at 818-446-0888. Now, before getting to our guests, the information you are about to hear is only for general information purposes only. We are not giving any legal or tax advice, and keep in mind that your situation is unique and the laws, rules, and regulations may change at any time. So before acting, make sure to obtain advice from your licensed professional. In addition, the opinions expressed during this webinar are those of the presenters. These opinions do not reflect the opinions or views of AGLA or of its members. Now, allow me to introduce today's guest. Kim Hopkins is the founder and president of the Electric Connection of Los Angeles. He started the Electric Connection in 1979 and over the years The company has grown into a 30-employee company, providing electrical services to property owners and businesses throughout the Los Angeles metropolitan area. The Electric Connection believes in quality and offers a lifetime guarantee on all their work. And I get incredible feedback. Kim, welcome. It's great to have you here today. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you, Daniel. I appreciate your amazing intro. I'll try to live up to all of those ones.
Well, I have a lot to say about you, Kim. I mean, you guys are great. I hear from our members all the time about the work you guys do, and it's spectacular. So keep up the good work. What can I tell you?
Well, that's our job, and that's what we do. So thank you for that. So should I start in on
Oh,
my
it's all,
presentation?
take the floor. It's all yours. I will go quiet.
Okay, I'm getting a little organized here. All right, so basically, I want to distress, address, geez, I want to address two things in this webinar. One of them is the 82 d cooling mandate that has recently come about in LA County and is, I guess, what I hear likely to show up in because of the city of Los Angeles is trying to adopt some form of it, maybe a very similar thing. And as you mentioned, Daniel, perhaps the state of California as well. And then the other thing is something I've had a webinar on before, which is insurance requirements to replace aging electrical panels. So basically, I want to start with the insurance panel issue because it's going to tie into the 82 degree in about the middle of this presentation. How the thing is this: the city of Los Angeles or the Department of Building and Safety, they actually don't care about the panels. This is an insurance issue, not a building department issue. And on the other hand, the insurance company could care less about the 82 degree mandate. However, the city of Los Angeles, county, and state of California, they do care. The thing is, from my perspective as an electrical contractor, they tie in together. If you know about both of them, it's important to address both issues at the same time. So that's what I want to present in this. So basically, getting back to the insurance company, pretty much they have a policy of hiring a licensed electrical contractor to thoroughly inspect the electrical systems in each building covered by our insurance company and replace any unsafe electrical panels within the building with modern approved panels. Now, it can be just a really gentle letter like this that a landlord can get, or it can be very severe. It says something like, "You've got Zinsco electrical panels and they must be removed within 30 days." Like, it can get very extreme. So what we do at our company is we need to see whatever the motivation is of the person calling the landlord or the property management company. What are they looking to accomplish? And if they've got something in writing, we want to take a look at it so that we can address the exact issues that are brought up in by the insurance company. These are the kind of panels that insurance companies want to see replaced. They've basically been flagged as dangerous. They've been recalled. You know, other things have happened over the last 50 years with these panels. And you know, the bad boys that are people are often familiar with, Zinsco, Sylvania, GTE, Challenger, Push-O-Matic, they need to go according to the insurance companies. And so that's what the insurance companies are demanding. Or you can get you know, the California Fair Plan for insurance, but it's so expensive relative to it. Within a couple of years, the landlords might have been able to pay for replacing the panels, and then they end up with a lot less insurance expenses later because of going ahead and doing this kind of work. Here's a main panel. There's a before on the left and a after on the right. Exchanging panels completely, when you replace one with another, it can be quite expensive. There's another solution sometimes that we can help our clients with, which I'll go into in a bit. Here's some sub panels on the left that we've replaced, and this is what they look like on the right. Same story. Okay, so what you want to do is combine an evaluation when you're doing two things at once. You're evaluating with in mind what kind of panels the client has, what the building, is it safe? And at the same time, you want to evaluate the 82 degree cooling mandate information. Like, is the building sufficiently powered to handle the new air conditioners? Now, some clients already have air conditioners in all their units. This is terrific because obviously they work and they're probably already in compliance with the mandate, which is terrific. Unfortunately, they may have the panels that are large enough to handle it may be the wrong brand, so they may have to replace the panels. If some of our clients get very lucky and they have large enough panels, they're not a brand that's banned by the insurance companies, and they already have air conditioning, so it's proven to be working, they're covered. They're good to go. So we do in our company, I'll just talk about what we do because it can apply to other contractors to a more or less degree. This is what we do. We get information from the client, which I've mentioned, and then we send out our field superintendent. He does an on-site investigation. He notes the brand of the main service. He determines the load capacity of the main service. He sees what the load capacity is on the sub panels and also what their brand is. And this is where it gets interesting. He determines if the existing power to the sub panel is sufficient to handle the additional load of a heat pump or air conditioner if they're not there at, when we look. If they're going to be added, it's a little more complicated than just saying you need more power. Maybe you do, maybe you don't. It's about the square footage of the rooms involved. And so it's helpful that someone would know how to figure that out. And also, here's the fun part. You can have sub panels. Let's say you have a 10-unit building and you have 50 amp sub panels in each unit. And it turns out, yeah, you've got enough power to add air conditioning in the rooms that need to have air conditioning. So you're good to go. But now remember that there's a main panel for the entire building that also needs to have enough power to supply all of those sub panels. So in the middle of summer, it'll be all of the units are turned on at one time. So the second question, other than are the sub panels big enough, is the main panel large enough to handle this increased load? So all these things are evaluated by our field superintendent when we go out there. After he does that, he sends it to me, and I review the report that he has written with all the images he's taken and whatnot. And I talk it over with the field superintendent as needed. If there is any work that needs to be done, if a client's very lucky, we just send something saying, here's all the information, you're good to go. Unfortunately, that sometimes is not the case, or maybe more often than sometimes. And so the report's going to include a cost evaluation to meet the current insurance requirements. And at the same time, it's going to include a cost evaluation regarding the 82 mandate if any work needs to be done regarding that. Once I've done that, gone over everything, I send a calendar invitation to the client or the property management, whoever it is that wants to, evaluate this information. And I go over with the client all the information on the report. I answer any questions and, very important, discuss many different options regarding this project. It's not just that every building is different, every tenant is different, and every manager is different, and more importantly, every owner is different. Like, they may have goals that they want to sell the building in 2 years. This is going to affect what we recommend they do. Or maybe they want to keep it long term, but at the same time, they want to remodel the kitchens. Well, okay, then we have to talk about that. Like, for instance, they want to put in a dishwasher or a microwave. Do they have enough power for that? Maybe they have to make judgments about, okay, it's going to cost X amount to increase the power to each unit, but if they don't increase the power, they'd still have enough for air conditioning if they didn't add a dishwasher. So all of these things come up in the conversation that we have. And then we also are in a position to provide any written documentation to the insurance company as needed. So that's basically how we operate with the our evaluation, which then is covered, the 82 degree and the insurance company. And even if nothing is done for even a year, we still have the records. So we can go back and advise clients on what the next step is. Like, maybe they're going to wait until the mandate comes into effect. Or, and here's another thing too, but I'm going to talk about why I really recommend that to our clients that they do this evaluation soon. Like, basically, don't wait. Whether or not they've got a letter for the insurance company, whether that they're waiting for LA City to decide that they want this mandate to be enforced. The bottom line is, if they do the evaluation now, we keep that. We have all the images, we have the records, and also the client knows what they're getting into in advance, whether they do any work or not. And more importantly, this has come up with EV car chargers more than once. In fact, quite often, certain programs come, economic programs. Like, it's not impossible that the state of California may say, yes, you have to do this, and here's a fund that you can get some of the financing relief from, that kind of thing. My experience for sure is it's a first come, first serve situation. And so it's really good, like with my clients that have done the evaluations already, they're ready to go. They just say, okay, we know what need to do, and this is what it's going to cost, and we want to apply for funding. So that's something to think about, why you might want to get these evaluations done in a relaxed way, with no emergency. You have take all the time you need to decide what to do, talk to the board members if it's a condominium, whatever. It's very helpful to just, in a relaxed, organized way, decide what's best for each building. Okay, this is about who should be able to do an evaluation. And obviously, whoever does the evaluation should be able to do the work, because they know what they're doing. But I'm just going to go over this list. Some of them are pretty obvious, like the electrical contractor should have a current C10 electrical license. That's pretty obvious. It's in force. And then also, they should have a pretty robust liability insurance. Like, I think $1 million liability is absolute minimum. Like, I think our company has 3 million plus an umbrella coverage past that. But I'm just saying, make sure, because things happen and you want your contractor to have liability insurance. You want them to make sure that their workers' comp policy is up to date. And also a warranty. Like, it's a minimum of a year warranty on the labor. Ours is basically a lifetime warranty on labor. So, maybe it's 5 years or 1 year, but I recommend a large warranty for that, the length of time. And then on the material, like, at least with us, we just warranty it exactly whatever the manufacturer, whatever the maximum is they do. That's our warranty on the material, since we didn't, make it or anything. Okay, another thing you should look for when looking for a contractor to do an evaluation or this kind of work is, do they have references of previously done replacement of subpanels, main panel, or do they have any kind of references like that? It's very important, because things can happen. And they can be really revelatory with whatever you find out from previous jobs that that person has done. So the experience is important. It's any contractor, any electric guy can go out there and replace a panel. You pull one out, you put one in. But there's so many codes involved in apartment buildings, and there's so many little ins and outs of this kind of thing, that it's really helpful that this is kind of a specialty that they do, and there are contractors like that out there, and I recommend you find specialty. And one way to know that is, have they done two or three buildings already, at least, that they can show references? So that would be something to look forward to. Also, it's important that whoever is out there, the crew that does the work, everybody there should have experience with tenant relations. Like, we've trained all of our guys to really pay attention to the needs of the tenants. Like, maybe somebody's sick that day, they got a Doberman Pinscher that's barking at them, or the key is to be very polite, be very calm, work with the manager. I'll give you a tip. Like, it's really helpful when we're going from unit to unit, that the manager is there, if there is a visible manager, so that the tenants feel calm and trusting, because they already know at least somebody that's coming into their unit. So that's one of our 10-point tips on tenant relations. It's good to have a very organized contractor for a lot of reasons. Obviously, scheduling the work, they're not like a one-day job when you're replacing panels. I'll just keep talking about a 10-unit building as an example, but maybe we can do two a day. And so that's 5 days, Monday through Friday, whatever it's going to be. It's important that the first day, if we've given tenants notice, 24-hour notice, it's going to be unit 101 and 102, that we actually show up, and so it's critical. It's better to have a slightly larger company than like a one-man operation, because no matter what happens with us, if we have a truck breaks down or an employee calls in sick or something, we have backup. So it's critical to not break whatever the rhythm is on the project, and so that takes somewhat some organization to do that. It's helpful if the people working on it are familiar with this 82-degree mandate, because they're going to be asked questions about it. They can look at the panel and make sure that, where are we going to run the wires to the heat pumps if we ever do that job? And then they can take photographs so that we have records for it in the future if it ever comes up. We may not do that for 2 or 3 years, but we still already know. Just a phone call away would give the owners what they need to do to make decisions. So let's see what else we have here. I think that pretty much covers it. There's something about financial assistance. It's a kind of a amazing luck sometimes, if you want to call it that. But there are buildings that have a affordability covenant, or there's Section 8 housing. There are currently programs to give those owners of those buildings financial assistance. I'm literally working on a project right now that theoretically is going to cost the owner nothing, and it's going to be like a $60,000 job. I mean, it's quite amazing. Unfortunately, it's not for high income areas. It's kind of a low income concept. But nevertheless, if anyone listening here has that kind of situation, be aware that maybe you might be able to get very good funding for an expensive job. And the last thing on this list that I have here is has experience to know how to minimize the cost of the job. This is really important. So rather than just say it costs X amount to replace your panel or your main panel, your sub panel, there it's way better if someone's got a lot of experience to know the ins and outs, because sometimes it can save enormous amounts of money. And I'll mention it in a minute, some of that. One of these ways to save money is a simple way. When you pull out a main panel, if you can see these on the right-hand side here, the middle one, you can see like a white area around it. That's the patching that was done, because when you take out an electrical panel and you put another one back, a new one, there's like a slot all the way around the panel that has to be patched. We charge $150 for each patching situation. However, like let's say it's a 50-unit building, it makes a difference. 150 times 50 is quite a lot of money. Ironically, the larger, or maybe helpfully, the larger the building, the more likely they have some kind of handyman situation that they've already got in place. We're very happy to work with handymen and let them do this part of the project. And we even have like a little paper pamphlet that shows them specifically what to do with photographs. But one way to save some money is to get handymen to do that part of the project. And then there's another way to save a lot of money, and this is a huge, huge deal. This is using Connecticut breakers to replace the circuit breakers in a non-conforming brand. Like, let's take a Zinsco panel. That's the insurance company will say something like, "Get rid of your Zinsco electrical panel," but you know what? Like, that's going to cost, oh, let's just say $50,000 to do that, or maybe 75. It depends. It could be hugely more than that if it's underground and it's a 800 amp service. But the point is, there's a different way to go. Rather than replace the entire panel, there's a company out there called Connecticut that replaces certain brands with their own models of the same shape of circuit breaker that are modern, laboratory approved and tested. They work just like a brand new breaker, only you just have to replace the breaker. So when we get into that kind of situation, which is quite often, what we can do is we can tell the owner, look, You don't need to replace the main panel. What you need to do is recondition the main panel. We'll sand down the bus bars and tighten up the bolts, and we'll do all of that and make it almost like brand new. Then we'll put in these Connecticut breakers to replace the Zinsco. And it's less than 10% the cost. If it's a, let's just say it's a $75,000, 400 amp service, it becomes maybe 5 or 6,000 to replace all the breakers and recondition the panel. So it's enormously beneficial, and we've done this with many of our clients. And keeping that in mind, I think I missed one. Yeah, okay. What you need is an insurance broker that understands how to find an insurance company that works with Connecticut. That's the simple way to say that. Some insurance companies don't, or they can't, or they don't like the building for some other reason, but often they do. My experience is it's getting easier to use Connecticut breakers. Like, the word is more out. You see, insurance companies, they Google which are the bad circuit breakers or panels, and then they just, make a policy. The white collar guy that's never been out on a job doesn't understand the difference between a circuit breaker and a main electrical panel. But I've seen it. I've literally seen in letters that they'll transfer back and forth these two terms, and they're completely different. So it's about insurance company executives or underwriters, their ignorance. And, but if you can find a good broker, they're familiar with this, they can make it happen for you quite often. Another way to save money is to not spend more than you thought you needed to. And what that means is a contractor says, yes, this job's going to cost $20,000, and this is the work we're going to do. And then halfway through the job, they say, oh, this mean old inspector, they said we can't put the panel in the same place because there's new codes about that. Or there's a fire-rated wall, and now we have to build a special box around it. Or there's a new policy about surge protection. They just started. They didn't used to enforce it. So I'm sorry, I've got to charge you more money now. Well, that's not what you want. What you want is some experienced contractor to be responsible and know everything about these kind of jobs, and so that it doesn't come up where there's an upset in the middle of the project. Like, should you pay them more, or should you make them just do what they promised to do? That's up to you. Like, we tend to want to just never raise our prices if at all possible. It's not always perfect, but that's almost always what we have signed a contract for. I'd say 99 out of 100. There can be some really crazy things that come up, but basically you want an experienced electrician to give you a true price before they start the project. There's another way to save money. This is like a good and a bad. Like, let's say you do have to replace the main electrical service. Okay, it's going to be very expensive, but you may have to do it because, let's say you've got a 200 amp main that, furnishes power to, let's say, 10 apartment units. That's enough, but it won't be enough if you're going to put in air conditioning. So if you're going to put in air conditioning, you're going to change that to like a 400 amp instead of a 200 amp. We can handle the 400 amps ourselves completely in-house, and that's great because they're pretty fast to get these projects done. But above 400 amps, let's say you get into a 20-unit building that needs an 800 amp or more, that becomes a really big issue because a lot of times underground parking locations they have new codes about what the panels are going to look like and what they're going to be. And sometimes the rooms that they were in aren't even large enough anymore to put them. Anyway, so there's ways to get a variance sometimes that allows you to do stuff that Water and Power or Southern California Edison doesn't currently endorse, but they will sometimes allow it if you can go through the gauntlet of getting a variance, which we do. And it's been quite successful. We just saved a client, oh, I don't know, literally about $500,000 because they had something that looks just like this, only the new code says that there's single phase power and there's three phase. Let's say for the elevator, there's three phase and everything else is single. Well, until about 20 years ago, it was just there's a three phase panel and there's the very large single phase panel for all the units. However, Water and Power has now decided No, you have to combine them. So you have to put all of it. So you have to get a really big three-phase panel and just take away from that the single phase that you need. So the problem with that is in a job like this, it would have cost another $250,000 to sum it up. We avoided that by getting a variance, by really proving essentially that the insurance company was making them do this. They had to do it, and a lot of other things, but ultimately we got an approved variance on that particular job. So that's another way you can save quite a bit of money. Okay, I guess we're getting toward the end here. By the way, that's a younger picture of me, but too bad. Anyway, so look, hire your own electrician if you want, if you feel comfortable with that. And just if you wanted me to look at it over the phone, if we don't go out, I do it for free. I do free consulting. What I do is I just look over whatever the project is. It's not so much looking at the price that I need. I need to know the scope of work that they're, referring to. And then I can point out, well, they're missing, they didn't put in this contract anyway. They didn't put in surge protection for all the subpanels or whatever I'm going to say. Or I might say, look, it looks pretty good. It looks like it's a very good bid. So if you like them and if you trust them, then do it. So either way, I'm more than happy to go over any project like that. Or anything else, really. I do. I've been doing free consulting for 40 years. I'm happy to do it with clients. Okay, I'm down to the last page here. What this is a QR code on the right that, if you point your phone at it, I think it'll take you to our website to much more detailed information about both the subpanel replacement, but also the 82 degree mandate. So if you wanted more information, you can get it there. And I believe that's my presentation.
Well, great job, Kim, as always. For some reason, I only see your logo. Oh, there you are. All
Oh, I
right,
was there
good,
a minute
good.
ago.
Yeah, I didn't feel comfortable just talking to your logo. It's good to see you.
Yeah, there we go.
I guess you struck a chord with some of the talk discussion on some of the financial incentives, and a couple of people have asked, well, how do you find out about these financial incentives? And someone also has a Section 8 project that they're working on. They're curious about this HUD funding that you had mentioned.
Yeah, okay. I don't know very much about it other than I know how to find out about it. And the way I find out is I work with a company called Optimum Energy, and that's their entire specialty. Like they'll t I call them and I say, look, here's the address. And what do you think? And then they tell me what they think. Sometimes it's good, sometimes it's nothing, sometimes there's something. I'd say any client like that, if they get in touch with me, I'll find out more information, then I can contact, Optimum Energy because that's what they do. It's way past my scope of
Got
figuring
it.
out.
Got it. So it's something that you help facilitate for your clients just because
Yeah,
you
it's
have a
not something I
contact.
personally know anyone in the
Right.
industry, and I can call them up and say, hey, do me a favor and give this guy some money. It's not like
Got
it's.
it. Got it. All right, that's great. Got a question from somebody. I guess they have a triplex, but it's three separate units on a property, and each of the units has their own electric meter. And he's being told by, I guess, DWP that if he was to do any extensive electrical work, he'd need to consolidate all these meters in one place. And he claims it's $100,000 to do that. Have you ever come across that situation? Have any comment that could help them out?
Well, I only come across it just every day. So yeah.
Okay, there
Other
you
than that,
go.
not very often.
Oh,
Yeah, once in an
that's
hour. Okay,
once in a
so
while.
the thing that it's they're not gonna let that go. If it's a I'm picturing three little bungalows or something that are
Yeah,
separated
that's what
by
it
air,
sounds
like
like.
they're not touching. If they're touching, we can do plenty. If you can get the buildings to touch, that's another story. But if they're completely separate, what you're going to have to do is, well, get a meter spot out there and talk to the service planner from the utility company. Where's the most likely place to put the main? And you're going to have to put 3 or even 4 meters there. Like keeping in mind a house panel, you might want it for the common area lighting or whatever. So there's not a lot that can be done. It just becomes about what's the easiest way and what is that going to cost?
About what typically triggers something like that, Kim? I mean, how much electrical work would you need to do where the utility is telling you this, you have to consolidate these meters?
It can happen. Well, it may happen in the 82 degree mandate issue. Like it may be that this is not a modern construction when you have a triplex with three buildings that it's
Yeah.
inefficient to, financially, that went away, I think. So that you've got an older building. So that a lot of times, well, sometimes they still have fuses, like screw-in fuses. At that point, an insurance company says, we're not going to insure you with fuses like this. You have to have circuit breakers. So that we cannot, there's no such thing as Connecticut breakers to replace fuses. That's not going to happen.
Right.
So it becomes you must upgrade the service to have enough power. Or from the insurance's viewpoint, it's you must upgrade them because you have fuses and we don't like fuses. So if they're going to upgrade, I always encourage, almost insist that our client not do the minimum. Like let's say they could put in a 200 amp and they could get by just now. And I say, yeah, but like you don't have air conditioning, or you may want to remodel the kitchen. You may want a microwave built in. At that point, it's a couple thousand more. I can get you a 400 amp instead of a 200 amp. And it's almost like I almost refuse to do the work because I can't tell you, in the beginning of my career, there were a lot of 100 amp services requested and I on houses, and I would insist on putting in a 200 amp. And it cost at that time something like $50 more. And sure enough, like now virtually every house requires more than 100 amps. So it was money well spent, this $50 that now would have cost like 2000, So it's the same
Got
way
it.
with the main electrical service. It's going to be very much like that.
I know you've been asked this question before, but I will ask it for this group we have on today. When you're doing these electrical panel upgrades, do you have to displace the tenants, or are you able to somehow coordinate so they could stay in place?
Yeah, I'm proud to say it's almost like a game, but we've like a little game to play, but we have never once had to displace tenants. And we're doing typically two or three buildings at a time. There's always a way to not have to get the tenants to move out. This habitability is a big deal, and it's very expensive, obviously, to the owners of the building. So yeah, there's always a way.
Got it. When there's a will, there's a way.
Yes, indeed.
So let me go to the next question. So the same person wants to know, does the electric connection coordinate with DWP or Public Works on behalf of clients for engineering and et cetera, et cetera?
Yes.
Great.
I was a little long-winded in my last answer, so I'll just make up for it in this one.
It's okay. The time's yours,
Yes.
Kim. Take all the time you need. This person wants to know, on a 65-year-old, six-unit apartment building, when you're upgrading these electrical panels, do you need to rewire the building too? Is that what you would you recommend that?
We do sometimes. There's various degrees of poorness to electrical wire. So the worst is knob and tube. This is almost non-existent these days in apartment buildings. It has come up every now and then. A knob and tube is where they have these old cloth wires, and after a while, the insulation on the cloth, it gets dry, and then it gets brittle, then it starts crumbling, and then you literally have hot wires that have bare spots. You just touch it and you're going to get a shock. And the fun part is it's not in conduit. They're literally stretched across attics and inside walls like clothesline. About every 4 or 5 feet, they circle around a little knob, and they go through like the wood of with tubes, hence the name knob and tube. But really, we won't even work on a building like that unless we can replace the wires. It's just like I mentioned, my insurance company, I've never had to use my insurance and I don't want to start. And I gotta say, it's just too much of a fire hazard to deal with that. So that's knob and tube. Then you've got until about 1950, you have the same cloth insulated wire. So then in apartment buildings, you'll often find either metal flexible conduit that the wires are run through, or sometimes black pipe, which was an earlier version, it's actually ironically better. But it's an older version of that. Anyway, if the wires are in really poor condition, if it's in a hot area of LA and it's been years and years, 50 years of, burning, We might say, look, it's really bad. You really need to replace these wires. But typically, I'd say 19 out of 20 buildings we don't replace the wires. We don't think it's necessary if it's inside conduit and if it still is semi-viable. We replace sub-panels and circuit breakers and main panels, but it's not that common that we have to replace the wires. We have to look at every situation to evaluate it to know.
Got it. Got it. So what do you suggest? I'm trying to figure out how property owners are going to be able to deal with this 82 degree mandate, because the requirement, if you're a larger owner, if you have 10 or more units, is to cool all habitable rooms. Are they going to require central air conditioning, or are you going to have to pop in a window unit in each habitable room? I mean, how do you think that's going to be accomplished?
Well, in theory, either of those are an option. And I'm going to mention on the 10 units or less, I think they're asking for one habitable room. What am
Correct.
I'm picturing, like it's a two-bedroom apartment in a 10-unit building. Like, what are they going to like share the bedroom every night? Like, I'm not really sure how that's going to work. I have a feeling it's going to become a non-issue, frankly. I think that anyone that's doing the work for any air conditioning will do a proper job for to because imagine 2 years later all rooms have to have it. There's kind of
Right.
a silly thing, but I think that what I've seen, because see, some of my clients are already doing this. They're just saying we're going to do it, so we might as well get it done. And I'll tell you why in a second, but to answer the question, they're using mini split systems, which cost more, but they're very effective. They have like a one condenser and then maybe two or three fans, one for the living room and one for each bedroom that blows the cold air. And by the way, the hot air, like in the winter, it's the hot air. So they decide to just go fully electric and on both, and they are pretty happy doing that, even though it's expensive initially, as opposed to getting inexpensive, window-mounted air conditioners that, in each room or something like that. They're noisy and not that efficient. And I haven't seen it. I haven't done any of those, to be honest with you. But they could be done. In theory, all that the city or county cares about is going to be, is it cold enough? That's really all that they don't care about noise, but I do. Noise pollution to me is a big deal. I'm not into it. So they're using mini splits. Mostly, that's what they're doing.
I see.
Oh yeah, what was I going to say? I had something else that had I don't remember. Sorry.
I know on the one habitable room thing, it's usually the peak heat is during the day, so hopefully families can congregate in the one cooled room, in these smaller properties. But what do you suggest for these smaller properties? Eventually, by 2032, they're going to need to cool all habitable rooms. And I assume, in your experience, costs have been going up, up, and up over the years. So it probably makes sense. And you could comment on this. It probably makes sense to do the work now if you have the money to do it. Would you
Oh
say?
yeah, absolutely. The prices have gone way up just even in the last 2 years. They really jumped during the pandemic. That was like crazy because of the material costs and whatnot. But now it's kind of stabilized. Our labor hasn't gone up that much, but the codes keep changing. They're so restrictive now. Like we now have to add, as I was mentioning, I think before, some surge protectors. Every time you change a electrical panel, you have to include a surge protection in that. That's another 250. So immediately the price went up for 10 panels. Whatever we charged before, it's another $2,500 now, just immediately. That happened in January. And it doesn't seem to stop. Another reason to do it now though, is, or at least to get the evaluation done and decide. It's just you'll have all the information you need to make whatever decision you want, including we better budget for the next 3 or 4 years to make sure we're ready to go. We have enough money to do this. Or if something comes along, like a financial incentive that I can immediately take advantage of if we can do it in the next 3 months, that also could come up. And the final thing is if you're serious about your tenants, understand that there is definitely a power infrastructure problem in the city of Los Angeles. They can say they want 82-degree mandate, and that's fine with them, except if they don't have enough power to supply every building in LA with enough electricity to have the air conditioning to do it. So if you want your tenants to stay happy and if you want your units to stay occupied, they're going to be looking. They're going to say, like, do you have air conditioning? Do you have it? And having it in advance is what some of my clients are absolutely concerned about.
Yeah, I have a 90-year-old building myself, and when I tell prospective tenants I have central air, I get a premium for it. It's definitely paid off over the years by doing it, but I did it about 12 years ago, and I'm sure you experience it all the time. I know you're out in the San Fernando Valley, Kim, and I'm sure you have power outages more often than we experience them on the West Side, particularly during the peak of summer. So we've got another question here. This person wants to know any insight on how HUD would determine if a unit needs to be cooled, how they would test it, would they use temperature gauges?
I don't have a clue as to what they're going to do.
Yeah.
It's not that complicated. Slap a thermometer on the wall and see how hot it is. I mean, I'm not even sure what that, if that was the question.
Yeah, I'm not sure about HUD, but I do know LA County, this is going to be mandated to the health department. So you're going to have health department inspectors going through, and you're going to have to pay for that pleasure. It's going to cost you a certain amount per unit, whatever they are going to figure out eventually. They haven't quite come up with the exact number. They only have estimates at this point. So I wanted to ask you something that in city of Glendale, they recently mandated the installation of heat pumps. And this is my complete ignorance on the subject, Kim, but what does a heat pump do? And how does that heat work in context with air conditioning? I just don't
Okay.
understand it.
Yeah, that's an interesting thing. Like to call it a heat pump to get air conditioning. That's an interesting idea. So I can explain it. I'll start by saying a mini split system that I was describing is a heat pump. It's a condenser, but essentially, let's talk about air conditioning for a minute. What it does is it gets air cold. How does it get air cold? It takes hot air from the outside and it runs it through its magic innards and it pushes out cold air. That's how it works. But a heat pump, it very much does the same thing. It's kind of like an air conditioner, very similar. It does exactly the same thing, really, but you can flip the switch and reverse it, and then it can take in cold air and it can blow out hot air. So that's where you're going to get your heating in the winter. It's going to just take the cold air that's there, the ambient air, and push in extract from it the heat and blow the heat into the unit.
Got
That's the
it.
di so the difference is reverse of air conditioning. So they
Got
call it a
it.
heat pump because it pumps heat either way. It pumps out the heat so you don't have it, or it pumps in the heat so you do have it.
I see. I see. And one of the options that we had advocated for with this whole 82-degree mandate was the installation of these swamp coolers. They seem they're a lot cheaper and don't use as much electricity. Do you think that might be a solution for some people?
It could be in the beach areas, maybe. When the if you can have an ambient that never goes above 85, probably you're going to be okay with that. I'm not an HVAC expert, but
Okay,
my
got it.
knowledge experience is that they work a lot better when it's already not so hot.
Got it.
Like when it hits 100 degrees, I'm not sure what a swamp cooler is gonna how much cooler it's gonna get it,
Got it. Got it. Well, listen, we had over 100 people on today, Kim. So tell their people back at the office to man the phones. I'm sure you're going to be getting a bunch of calls today. Pete, let's put up Kim's information on the screen. And let me say thanks to Kim Hopkins from the Electric Connection of Los Angeles. Kim, a number of people asked to get copies of your slides. Is that something you can make available to us so we can email them out in PDF form?
Yeah, I think so.
Great. So if you could just email that to me, if it, not a problem, I'd appreciate it. And we will get that out to everybody who registered for this. And thank you again, Kim. I hope we can do this again real soon. This is really incredible information. And especially as we get closer to the deadlines for this 82-degree mandate, it would be great to revisit this topic with you if you could.
Okay, well, thank you, Dan, for hosting it. It's always a pleasure.